The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome along to the Let's Get Running podcast. Sorry for shouting. This is coming out a bit later. This is late Monday night. We're supposed to record this morning, but somebody went AWOL. The caramel kid. I tweeted about it earlier. He went AWOL. He's back though. How are you doing?
Well. I'm good. I'm just recovering. I've got bruises all over the place.
Eesh.
Yeah. Tough. Got smashed up.
How was it in the skiing trip?
Well, you've seen Cool Runnings. So the first, got a brand new shiny helmet. Yeah. It's like a 160-pound luminous orange Oakley helmet.
Yeah.
Going down a flat run. So it's like one of the easiest runs. So I'm mucking around doing like swiveling 360s.
Yeah.
And I literally just catch the edge on the backside. And it's almost like someone shoved me. I went straight onto my back. And then thumped my head, and then my helmet just cracked all the way down the back to the middle. I was like, "Oh shit!" Brand new helmet, but I was thinking, "Well, that would have been a big ass bruise on my head otherwise."
It would have cracked your head.
I don't think it would have cracked my head.
To hit that hard, geez, we're lucky to still have you, Jermaine. If there was me complaining about where you were. We're lucky to have you still alive. But, hey. So did you manage to carry on snowboarding then, or you had to stop there?
No, I carried on. Obviously, I was winging it with the broken helmet.
Oh, Jesus. We're lucky, he's still here. So then if you were snowboarding and you had a cracked head, you probably weren't running then?
Well, I tried to run, but the place you were standing had no treadmill.
Okay.
So I was like, they said, "Oh, you can go running outside," and I'm like, "But usually, at least resorts are really hilly."
Yeah.
But it's next to a lake, frozen lake.
Oh,
so
nice.
She said, "Oh, just run around the lake." I was like, "Okay."
Yeah.
And it's like combed snow, so it's all like compact and stuff. So I'm running; it's okay, obviously traction and stuff.
Yeah.
And then some bits are dodgy. Yeah. It's like you're just running, and all of a sudden your leg just goes like knee deep into snow, so it's just like zoom. So it was hard work.
Yeah.
It was hard. I was taking, you know, when you're running on sand, when you got to take the pigeon steps.
Yeah.
I was running. So basically, I got a good ass wiggler.
Yeah,
I came back.
You're in good cross country shape then. You're ready for the national cross with that. But we better get ready because this is basically our last week. If anyone's been following the last couple of weeks, we started, I think, 2 weeks ago with Wendy, we announced a competition to see if you could improve over 10K over a series of weeks. And I think this is coming up to our last week, so it's the last chance you've really got to get out there and give the 10K a go, see if you can mark an improvement. And the chance to win a lovely Let's Get Running t-shirt. So go back and have a listen to Wendy's podcast. I will leave exactly the details on our show notes. But are you going to post an improvement, Jermaine? Are you ready for it? When are we going to run your second 10K?
I'll do it this week. I'll dust it up.
Yeah, nice.
I reckon I'm ready. I just like leave the backpack at home, you know.
Well, I've got to run it. I'm going away to Ireland this weekend, so I've got to run my 10K as part of a 10-mile race. So there's no hope in hell of me recording
percentage improvement. Well, you could if I go crazy
and hold on for dear life, but yeah, we'll see. But hey, we'll give it a go. But our interview today is a good one for those people who've been doing the challenge, because we are going to be speaking to Alice Wright. And Alice is based over in America, but she is the UK's, according to rankings last year, the second fastest female at 10,000 metres in the whole of the UK. So we're going to chat to her about that. She was sixth place at the European Championships. She's going to give us her advice on how to nail the big occasion. Her mental strength is one of her key strengths. So So she's going to talk a lot about why that is and how she stays relaxed comes to the race. But we've got to stay relaxed, Jermaine. How are we going to do it? Are you set? Are you going to give it everything?
Well, sometimes, you know, like if you train at 70% when you race, you can go faster. Yeah. But if you train at 100% then when you race, then there's not much left. Because you're almost race, because you're racing and training.
Yeah. And to be honest, at the moment, I'm just getting used to like being a dad. And I work from home, so I tend to have to get up in the morning, do my run real early. Like, well, I say really, this is for me, real early, 7 o'clock I do my run. And I'm struggling to get into the pattern of running hard in the morning that early. It's really hard to run 7 o'clock in the morning and to churn out a big session. So my training's not going for so well, but...
But that's normal people do that.
I know. But for 2 years, I get up at 8 o'clock every morning and I'm just in the pattern and I'm really struggling to adapt to that seven. Is 7 o'clock a normal time to go and do a session? That seems like too early to me. I couldn't do it.
Well, people like jog to work.
Yeah, that's true. But hey, so I'm struggling with that. I'm slightly worried about our half marathon challenge. Well, the Battle of the Podcast challenge coming up in March. We'll get onto that. We'll just worry more about the 10K first. But yeah, it's slightly worrying.
Yeah, so you're worried that I'm going to let the side down?
Yeah, I think I'm going to, yeah. But,
no, not you, me. You'll be well ahead. You'll be fine.
I think the Let's Get Running team has seen better days. Jermaine, you're still the 1500 meter steeplechase record holder, right? That's still your title?
Yeah, at the moment I am, yeah.
At the moment, yeah. And Sean, a washed up or has been. I think we're more washed up than we've ever been right now. But hey, I also wanted to have been to the physio actually this week. So I'm struggling with the adapting to getting up so early. I'm struggling with the motivation to run. And I'm struggling to get into a routine because I've not got any focus other than these challenges. I've not got a training plan or anything I'm working from. So I'm struggling. But also, I've been having bad knees and my posture so bad. So when people who have had a little baby would know this, but like, because when you're holding a little baby, you're always, you know, changing nappy, whatever, you're always bending over. My shoulders are giving me big grief. So I had to go.
Just get a higher table. Get a higher table.
Yeah, I know. Maybe that would be the idea. But they sort me out. My posture's bad. My hip flexors. He gave me a loosened off my hip flexor. And damn, I've never had more pain in a massage before in my life. I was like a little girl. So yeah, I'm hoping that will help me out and it will give me a bit of a boost in my training performance. But hey,
it's just rhythm. Once you get into a rhythm, like you said, routine,
yeah,
do the things, then it's easy. Before you know, you've done a month's training.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's going to take me more than a month to get back in, but we'll see. But that's coming up, the Battle of the Podcast. So you've heard us talking about it a bit before, but essentially we're racing with three other podcasts. So it's a House of Run over in America. They're more of an athletics podcast, but they great listen. So check
when you say athletics, that's track and field for
track
them,
and field. Yeah. So they're more of a track and field pod, but they do other stuff during the summer. So they talk about marathons. They're both more distance guys than they're short distance guys, but their focus is mainly on track and field, I think. And then we've got Cloud 259, who just kind of do everything. They're more of a road, but also track and field and things. So we're sort of facing off against them, and you guys can get involved with that. So there is going to be some details on the show notes.
There's three different categories, isn't there?
There's three different categories. So the winner of the Battle of the Podcast, from the three of us, is going to be the team. We're going to take the average of the two hosts. So on our account, we are screwed.
Whoa. No, we're up against 800 meter runners.
We'll be fine. We'll be competitive on that count. The next ones we need your help with. So the next one is the first. We haven't decided whether it's going to be the first five or the first 10 fastest times of other people, of podcast listeners. So if you are up for racing and you want to declare for us, that's great. We need 10 fast male and female runners, like a cross country style team point scoring system. So.
Would that be 10 to score mixed gender or 10 in each gender?
I think it's 10 to score mixed gender.
Okay.
And then we have points based on participation. So the more listeners we can get to run and declare for us, the better. And the way you do it, all you got to do is there's not a particular race. There's not a particular time you've got to do. But in the month of March, you've got to run a half marathon and you've got to declare for Team Let's Get Running, Team House a Run, or Team Cloud 259. And the easiest way you can do that is on Strava. So there's a Strava group called Battle of the Podcast. I want you to join our Strava group first if you're going to be joining us. So I'll put links to both those things. A bit complicated. Join our Strava group, please, but also join the Battle of the Podcast Strava group. Post your half marathon time. You can do it on your own, to be honest. You just got to run 13.1 miles and you've got to run a time for it. And if you do that, you can help us to be the fastest running podcast so far out there in the land, on the globe.
In the land, in the universe.
In the universe. So we need your help to do that. That'd be good. I'll summarize these instructions on the show notes, but that's all you need to do. Join the Strava group. In fact, if you just go on Strava and search Let's Get Running, you'll find us. And if you, again, you're on Strava, search Battle of the Podcasts, you will find us. And join those two groups and then get ready, get training for the half marathon. Get yourselves together.
No. So what have you been doing? What have you been up to?
What I've been up to, mainly trying to get back into running, but also with a little baby now. So we've got, I've probably said it a million times, 8-week-old little baby. He's not very well at home, actually, but we've just been hanging out. I work from home, so I get to see quite a lot of her, which is nice. We went to baby cinema the other day. There's such a thing as baby cinema.
Baby cinema.
Yeah.
What?
it was quite funny, actually. Basically, just loads of mums looking for something to do, so they're just loads
crying babies.
The trouble is, right, it's crying babies, but then also they got the sound turned down a little bit because they don't want it to hurt the baby's ears, so basically you can't hear anything. And they had Mary Queen of Scots on, which is quite a complicated film. You've got to pick up the dialogue, and yeah, it was all right, it was fun, but yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to. Bit weird. But I've been keeping up to date with the running news. It's a new feature on the show, running news. We're going to talk about running news. You just said your former coach's son has broke the British record for 600 metres. Is that right?
Yeah, indoor. 600 metre record. He ran 1:15.
Jeez, wow. Just think about that.
The fastest I've done is 1:17 in 800 metres.
Wow. Jeez. And not indoors, I don't imagine, right?
Yeah, but yeah, not indoors.
Wow.
Well, I've never run indoors.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's almost like doing a 50 and a 25, but I guess that's even splits. Probably doesn't work out like that when you actually run it.
Yeah, Jesus.
Thomas Staines.
Thomas Staines, okay. There was also like a fast 10K the other day, wasn't there? I think there's a lot of guys, they went to your favourite 10K, Jermaine, because he said it was short, Chichester.
Well, it's not short, it's got 3K downhill.
Yes, 3K. They now do it on a race course, but they had seven men went under sub 30 minutes on that course. I think Steph Twell also did 33 minutes and 15, I think. It's a pretty fast course still, even though it might not be the same one as you used to run on. So next year, everybody, if you're looking for a fast race, get down to Chichester. And there was a really fast half marathon in Japan, I think.
That's a bit far to travel.
But there was a lady, Sinead Diver, I think her name was. She's an Irish lady. She ran 68.55, right?
Well, yeah.
She beat. She was one place ahead of Charlotte Perdue, who had a good run, 69.46. She went 68.45. She's 42.
Whoa!
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So she's looking like she's in good form. I think she's running London Marathon, so she's one to watch out for. If you can run 68.55, that's pretty impressive. And if you want to watch something exciting, British Universities Championships down in Bicton in Devon, down near my hometown.
The Boosters.
They're Boosters. What did I call them? Bucks. Yeah, whatever they are. Anyway, the British University Championships. The men's race, the final race. If you want to watch an exciting finish to a race on a cross-country, 10K cross-country course, it was 700th of a second between the two first winners. I think it's Emile Caress and Patrick Diver. It's a really exciting race. If you want to check that out, I'd go on Athletics Weekly on Twitter. They've got a video of the race there. So, yeah, big things going on. But we should get over to Alice. We should listen to what her tips are, because we want to run a fast 10K this weekend. We've got to try and mark an improvement. So here's Alice to tell us how we should do it. Here we go.
So
So on this week's show, we are talking to Alice Wright. How are you doing, Alice?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. And you're over in Flagstaff in Arizona at the moment.
Yeah, that's where I'm based. I'm based with the Northern Arizona Elite in Flagstaff, yeah.
Nice. I've always wanted to go over. Well, what makes it so special, do you think, for training?
I think it's really well known, I think, in the running community. And so we get a lot of runners coming in and out, and I think that really makes it quite a special place to train, because you're constantly meeting new runners, I don't know, kind of feeling more part of that like running community. And when you go to other races, you kind of meet people that have come to Flagstaff to train, and it just feels very special because there's always runners out, and
yeah,
it's not always the same faces that you're seeing. You're seeing, you know, I've seen some of the people from the British team that I knew, and then you see people from the Ingebrigtsens were here a couple of months ago, and it's just really special that people, you know, come here to train and you get to meet them and run with them sometimes.
Yeah, and what are conditions like there to train?
So obviously it's at altitude, 7,000 feet, and so it is definitely pretty tough. You kind of have to adjust your training. My training has changed quite a lot, actually, since that I moved here. And I mean, I was based in Albuquerque, which is at 5,000 feet,
yeah,
for about 5 years. And I have had to make some adjustments. Coming up here, it just takes a little longer to recover. It's hard to get in speed-specific work here. You can't hit those times that you can down at sea level for, you know, 400 meters, 200 meters. And so, yeah, it is definitely tough training up here. The scenery is stunning and beautiful,
really?
But it is hard. Yeah, it is hard training.
You're part of, you said, the Hoka One. Is it the NAS Elite team?
Yeah, that's it. Uh-huh.
What does that look like? How did you get involved with them, and how big are the team?
So right now, actually, it's the biggest it's ever been. We've got 15 of us, and we've just added 4 more guys. But for me, it was quite a natural progression from university. You know, I knew I wanted to stay at altitude, and that kind of limited my options then. You know, I was looking at teams that were based at altitude, and, you know, as much as, you know, Worcester is my home and everything, I had been in Albuquerque for 5 years. So part of me saw that as kind of like my second home. And
yeah,
Flagstaff, it's only 4 or 5 hours away from Albuquerque. I didn't want to go too far, and I didn't want to take too many big risks that first year after leaving university and joining a professional team. You know, I didn't want to go down to sea level and change my training completely. And, you know, NAZ Elite, they have a quite a similar training schedule and training philosophies as what I was doing at UNM with Joe Franklin. And so it felt like quite a natural progression.
So it wasn't a tough choice between coming back here to live in the UK and staying out in America. You were quite keen to remain in the US.
You know, I definitely miss my friends and family in England. And I wish that they lived closer, honestly, because it is tough, you know, being so far away. Especially in Flagstaff, you know, I have to now get a 2-hour bus down to Phoenix, and then normally I can't get a direct flight from Phoenix, so then I go Phoenix to Los Angeles, and then once I had to do Los Angeles to Amsterdam, and it does feel like such a long way, and sometimes I get off that flight and I think, my God, I can't do this many more times, it's just so far. But I know that this is the best place for me, for my training. You know, I've been so fortunate to be given this opportunity, and I would be foolish to waste that. Another thing also for me is that I am from a very small village in Worcestershire. And for me to even get into Worcester Athletic Club, which is my home club in England, you know, it takes about 40 minutes for me to get there. And it would be so time consuming. And then also I can't actually drive in the UK, embarrassingly.
Okay.
I came out to the US when I was quite young. And so I have almost more of a life here. You know, I can drive here, and I feel just more independent in the US, and I think it's because of those 5 years that I was here. Those the time when you kind of grow up, I think, and that was for me in the US. And so I don't feel like I have a great training setup. It would take me a while to get that training setup sorted if I was to move back to the UK.
And comparing the scene in the US, having some of these professional teams, is there more opportunities to race? What's the difference for you between the scene in the US and the club scene back in the UK?
Yeah, so I do feel like there's a very big team culture in the US. You have these teams, you know, the Brooks Bees, the Bowman team, like our team, and then the Boston New Balance team. There's lots of different teams that are traveling around.
Yeah.
And that's an aspect that I really enjoy, whereas in the UK, rather, at least when I was there, you know, up until about 18, it was always kind of Aldershot and then St. Mary's. I know that there are new teams that have, you know, formed since I've left, like the Phoenix Athletic Club and the Manchester New Balance Group. I know there are some great teams there, but I feel like the US is maybe a little further on from that. I feel like the UK is still kind of in the early stages of building these teams.
Yeah.
And the US has that structure in place.
And thinking back to what sparked your initial interest in competitive running, like the beginning of your career, what was that? What got you started on the road to where you are now?
Honestly, it's a bit of a generic answer, but I did obviously the Village Fun Run. I feel like all young runners kind of do that.
Most guys are being like, you know, living in cities and stuff. The Village Fun Run's a bit different, you know. Like, was it like part of like I come from a small town myself, so I know what you mean. But a lot of us, you know, from cities and stuff. Was it like maypoles and that sort of thing? And
no, honestly, it was just actually, I think there probably were maypoles in the early days in that race. But no, there's just a fun run, or it's the Village of Abbley. There's either the 3K, I think it is, fun run, which I did when I was young, and then the next year I decided I want to do the 10K. And you know, at the time it seemed like a big event. It would have been kind of hard not to be the top three, I think, when there's only three females in it. Yeah, you know what I mean? You were destined for success no matter what you did. But I do think that as a young runner, any kind of success that you have and the support that you get, especially from my family, my sisters were also, and my parents, they were always like, oh, you're so good at running. And I think any type of positive reinforcement that you're having really does mean a lot to young runners. And it makes them want to just carry it on because you think, oh, I'm good at this. I'm going to carry it on. And I think you enjoy things you're good at. And I know that sounds very obvious. I think that goes a lot with like life as well. At school, if you're good at maths, like you follow that through all the way through. And it just takes that kind of like reinforcement in the beginning for people to be like, wow, you're so good at this and that, for you to pursue that. And I think that I was very fortunate that my family were, you know, just so supportive of me running. Despite no one in my family actually running, they were all very, you know, on board with it and everything. So I definitely put it a lot to my sisters and my parents, and just the support I had from Worcester Athletic Club and my school as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did that support look like? Did they involve getting you involved with a club? But you said you're at Worcester.
Yeah, so I actually started Stairport Athletic Club for, I think I was maybe there for a year, and then I got very involved in field hockey. As my peers kind of grew much taller and stronger than me around me, I realized, you know, this is a bit futile for me to continue with hockey, as I just kept getting either hit or it wasn't going to work for me. And so then I decided Worcester Athletic Club. And yeah, I think my school did kind of say, you know, there's this great club in town, you should join it. But I also say, you know, my school were very willing to help me with like my running and everything, because they let me for school games lessons. We had, I think the girls in the winter could either do like netball or hockey, but they used to say to me that I could run around the fields if I wanted to. So, you know, they were really like,
keep you out of the way, kind of keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I used to do a run on their games lessons. And then obviously we had the school cross country, which was a big event of the year for me. I'm very nervous for that one.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else cared at all, but I used to prepare greatly for that. I think it was a mixture of the school and then definitely Worcester Athletic Club. As I kind of got to 14, 16, you know, those years, it was heavily influenced by my coach, Dave Walker, at Worcester Athletic Club. Yeah, I got a lot to thank to both of them for.
And you had a lot of success early, didn't you? Did you win national medals and things when you were a teenager?
Well, I was always second, wasn't I, to Jess and Amelia. Yeah.
But, it's a tough year to be in. Yeah.
It is, yeah. First loser, I like to say.
Yeah.
But I was second quite a lot, maybe too much, I would say, at English schools. And then, you know, I would do pretty well on, like, the smaller kind of county scenes. But then I did suffer injury I think it was about 3 years, maybe two. 2.5 years. Now I think back to it, it's such a pointless waste of time, because it just was one of those injuries where, you know, as an impatient youngster, I was just trying it out every time it felt, you know, slightly good. And then I just put it straight back to square one. And I think that cycle just continued for about 2.5, 3 years. But I actually, you know, I'm not grateful for that time, but I think if it hadn't been for that injury, I wouldn't have gone to the US, because you know that saying, like, why change? I can't remember the exact saying, but why change something if it's working for you?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have changed. You know, if I was still running well, I would have been like, no, I'm not risking. I'm not going to risk it and go to the US. But because I was just really at my wit's end, I was just like, you know, I'm going to go I'm going to use the US and see if I can get things right there. And it was the best decision that I could have made. And I'm very fortunate and grateful kind of for that time that pushed me to make that decision, yeah.
So did they get in touch with you then? So was there an offer on the table, or did you sort of seek out opportunities outside of the UK?
No, I was pretty against actually going to the US. I thought, no, I'm going to go to Loughborough or St Mary's. But then, yeah, the coaches in the US, they can be pretty persistent. Yeah. But I was very flattered to actually be contacted, because in my mind, you know, I'd got a couple of runner-up positions and I'd run one kind of mediocre 3K.
Mm.
I just didn't feel, it was almost too good to be true what they were offering. I just thought, no way, like, yeah, they're going to be offering me a scholarship to go to university. And another thing also was that was when I think it had been a year before that the tuition had changed in the UK for university, and
yeah,
it was when we had to start paying. And so I think financially it made the right decision. And it was really, in the end, it was my sister Amy that kind of pushed me. She just said, you know, you can go, and if you hate it, you can come back. But if you love it, then great. If I didn't at least go and try it, you know, yeah, I'd always be thinking, what if? Yeah, and I felt like I really had nothing to lose. It wasn't as if my running was, you know, going really well. Yeah. I was injured and things weren't going great. But that's not to say that things did work out in my first year either. I was a mess in my first year, and it definitely took me a good year of university to sort myself out.
Yeah. And in terms of what you studied there, were you keen at that stage to take on a career as an athlete? Was that in your mind, or did you think, I'm just going to give this a go and see what happens? What lot of sort of life options did you have?
Initially, believe it or not, I was, for about a year, I was all set on going to Harvard, and I'd done all the exams. I went for a visit there. I'd had interviews, and I was really into going to Harvard. My school were really behind me. They were like, oh yes, this would be great, you know, you go to Harvard. And I'd watched Legally Blonde basically and thought, yes, like, that's what I want to do. But then I had an interview in England with one of their people that works in England, and they didn't like the fact that I'd taken sports science A level. And so then they were like, well, you know, what about these other schools? And I remember thinking, no, I've, you know, Harvard or nothing, that's it, you know, I'm gonna go to Harvard or not. And then, yeah, that's when UNM got in touch, and my sister was like, you should just go and try it. But I really had no intention of going to the desert. And, you know, they offered dietetics, and I thought, oh, whatever, I'm going to go give it a whirl. But I actually ended up completely changing path, which is one reason I do love the US system. So I think in the UK, you pick your subject, you say, you know, I'm going to go to university and I'm going to study history or English or biology.
Yeah.
But in the US, you actually have probably 2 years really to get a feel for all the different subjects and see which one you want to choose. And I, for me, that was very important, because I hadn't had, my mind wasn't completely made up.
Yeah.
I felt a bit rushed. I thought, oh my God, I just better choose dietetics. Perfect. I'm interested in nutrition. I'll go for that. But, you know, I got to try loads of different subjects, and I changed my mind, you know, my major changed maybe 3 or 4 times. In the end, I actually did, so it's called liberal arts, and you actually have three topics kind of included in that. So it's, you know, I did health education, management, and then it's called communications. And then I did my master's in business afterwards. But for me, that was great. You know, I could have 5 years of being on scholarship, and I could get 2 degrees in that. So that was a very good kind of use of my time academically, I felt, as well. Yeah.
And it's a great, like, scene, isn't it? The US sort of a collegiate scene. Yeah. They put a lot of attention onto their sports, and, you know, the NCAAs is a massive event to compete in. So it was
Yeah, I will say, you know, I don't think the NCAA is for everyone. I know people that have come out to the US and then decided it wasn't for them after a year. And I think there's really no shame in that. I think if you give it a go and you decide it's not for you, then, you know, good for you for trying it, honestly.
Why do they tend to fall out of it then? Is it the amount of pressure they put on you to perform? Or?
Yeah, I have to say, for me, like, moving into a professional setting, it is not that much different from being at college. You are treated so well as an athlete in college. I know, at least I was at UNM. I had great medical treatment. But comes with that is, you know, the responsibility to race well. You know, if you are getting these athlete privileges, you know, you're having a training room where you're getting constant kind of, it's not so much physiotherapy, but you get access to machines like ultrasound and STEM and anything to kind of keep you healthy. And especially at UNM, you know, Joe Franklin and his team, they would bend over backwards to make sure I was healthy. And, you know, I cannot thank them enough for that. And that was something that I couldn't get in England, where I was at least in Worcestershire. you know, things might have changed there now. And I like to think if I could go back, I could get more medical treatment in Worcester. But at least when I left, I was really struggling with that injury. I have to say the reason why maybe, you know, people do drop out of the NCAA system is because, yes, the racing there is pretty overwhelming. The first race I did in that system, I was seventh from last. I was 157th at Notre Dame. Yeah. And it was a blur, honestly. There was just a mass of bodies all running at the same pace, which was far too fast for me at the time. Yeah. And it's not, you know, I've done the cross countries in England and they're brutal. You know, I did one at Alton Towers where I think two people broke their legs.
Yeah. Like, it was awful, wasn't it? The people were like being carted up on the stretchers and the stretcher people were falling over and you couldn't walk. Yeah, I remember that race. But, the senior men's got cut down from 12 to 10K because they couldn't handle it. Yeah.
Because I remember there was one hill where we were literally clawing our way up this mud.
Yeah.
I was on my hands and knees and I looked behind me at one point and other people were doing the same. I just thought, oh my goodness.
That's like, cross country. Yeah, none of these pancake flat courses.
I know.
There's a line, I think that crossed.
The Brits love joking about that, don't they? They love lording it over the Americans. That, it's not real cross country. But I think it's just too different cross country. Personally, I prefer the nice, you know, nicely primed golf courses. That's perfect.
Yeah. Well, you've had success over them. It's gone well for you. Obviously, you got a bronze at the under 23 Eurocross.
Yeah.
And you've had other success at cross country, so it's working.
Yeah, European kind of races, minus the like little obstacles they like to put out in those races. Mm. I remember a lot of hay bales and like logs that we had to kind of steeplechase. But apart from that, the courses at the European races that I've done have been very similar to the ones that I've done in the US, and so therefore that has suited me. But yeah, I think I do have slight like PTSD from that one at Alton Towers, and I just think, oh god, like that's not my cup of tea, but I mean I'll do it for sure.
So would you say kind of your strength as a runner now, like, would you say it's in cross country? Also, you've had a lot of success at the 10,000. Did you get sixth place at the Euros, obviously, like I mentioned at the beginning last time, but also aren't you the second fastest runner last year by in the UK or from a UK runner? Is that right?
I was. And I would say right now my event is the 10K and up, really. I'm actually doing the Houston Half Marathon in about 10 days' time. This one is a little bit, you know, kind of just getting a feel for the distance. I haven't had the most ideal prep. I've only really had about a month of training for this one due to a little injury setback that I had last year. But I kind of think sometimes, I was saying to my teammates today, actually, I was just like, you know, you never really feel 100% ready to race, but you kind of just sometimes have to go with it and be like, well, you know, time to swallow my pride. If it doesn't go well, there's always other races. And, you know, I need to make the most of the time that I am healthy. The worst thing that you can do is be training for months and months, be really, really fit, and then get injured at the last minute. And, you know, I'm focusing on staying healthy.
Yeah. And with the track, with the 10,000, it's quite an art to running 10,000 metres. Because it's quite 25 laps is quite boring, right? And it's quite difficult to remain sort of to concentrate for that period of time. Like, why do you think you're suited particularly to doing that sort of thing? Why have you had such success in the Euros and last year?
You know, I did start running 10Ks, I guess, quite young in the grand scheme of things. I think I was probably 19, and I have done a lot of 10Ks, I think, 4 or 5 a year, which I'm not sure if that is a lot. It looks quite a lot on Power of 10 when you go on it and you see, oh my god, I've done quite a few 10Ks. But and it does definitely take wear and tear on the body. But with that, you know, you learn how to run a 10K, and it does take a while to kind of locking in and getting into that rhythm. And then the other thing for me is, like, I like to pride myself, without sounding arrogant or anything, I like to pride myself on my mental strength and just being able to just grind it out and just stay in that kind of race zone for as long as possible. And I think ultimately that's why I'd like to move to the marathon one day. And I think the 10K, you know, that does require quite a lot of that.
Yeah. And with that mental strength, is that something you've worked on, or is that something that is just comes naturally to you, do you think?
You know, honestly, I've always been a very competitive individual. And I think that probably does come from just my sisters and I, and my whole family is very competitive. We might not all be very athletic, but we definitely are very strong-willed and competitive. And, you know, I've just been brought up that way. And it's something that I just, I like to think is a strength of mine. You know, maybe genetically I'm not meant to be running fast, but at least I have the mental aspect. Sometimes they say that that's almost more important than actually being genetically able to run fast, but you know, we'll see. I'm sure it can only take me so far, but I'll at least see how far that is.
Yeah, it's interesting you're saying about moving to the marathon. I remember there was a big guy, I can't remember who made the suggestion, but there was a guy who said the reason why British marathon runners collectively were probably stronger in the 80s, British guys, is because they were doing a lot of 10,000 meter racing. I think it might have been Eamon Martin might have said it, but
okay.
He was saying the more you're used to it, that kind of the focus of the 10,000 meters on the track, the better that is, prepares you for that marathon sort of pressure and focus when you get on. So all that racing is probably doing you good.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also just the type of training that I've been doing the last kind of 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, we do a lot of long tempos and we did, for example, yesterday we did 15 by a K. And I think mentally, you know, when you start, I was in like quite a lot of pain after three.
Yeah.
But teaching yourself to, you know, I had 12 more to do after I'd done three. And I think mentally kind of working on that in training, I'm not one of those people who... I don't see a sports psychiatrist or psychologist rather. And I know that works a lot for people and athletes. I've heard great success and things like that. I don't personally do that. I rather work on those things in training, kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
You know, I do it in training. I try and focus and I try and treat, you know, big session days almost as if they're race days.
Okay.
You know, you don't want to be giving it everything and you don't want to be too mentally focused because it can just wear you down for actual races themselves. But I think it is important to practice that kind of mindset and pushing through when you think that you can't actually do a session, and then you just tell yourself, well, I've got no option, like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And I like to say to myself, you know, if I do get to that point in the session where I think, my God, I just, like, cannot do, like, another flipping K.
Yeah.
I say to myself, well, good luck to you, Alice, in the race, because you're going to need to be running faster than this in a race, and you're not going to be having any type of recovery. So, like,
Pull your bloody socks up and get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't like to be too emotional with it. I don't like to be, like, let myself feel those, like, pathetic thoughts. So you just kind of, like, man up and get on with it, honestly.
And I was going to say, you're good at sort of coping, sort of big race mentality, I guess, good at coping a big press situations. And I guess I guess the strategy there, you kind of answered that question in terms of you think a lot, you use these big sessions as almost preparation bits, and you put focus on them, thinking about how you're going to focus in the main race.
Exactly. And I think also sometimes, like, my naivety actually can help me sometimes because I'm not someone that really looks up who I'm racing against. And I know it's something that you probably should do. You should know who you're racing against and what they run and all this.
Yeah.
But I actually just rather, you know, I'm going to go to the start line. I'm going to run as best as I can. All you can do is your absolute best. And what is the point in, you know, I know tactically, especially for shorter races, it's better to know who you're racing against. But for me, at least when I went to Europeans, I honestly remember turning up and going to the stadium the day before and thinking, oh gosh, it's a bit bigger than I thought it was going to be. Like, wow, there's quite a lot of people here. And then, you know, people were like, oh, it's going to be on TV. And I was like, oh, my God, like, this is bigger than I thought. Like, I really wasn't expecting it to be that big. And I definitely went in with quite a sheltered mindset, I think.
Yeah. You didn't even think it was going to be on TV?
Well, I mean, I thought maybe it might be on, like, Red Button Demand or something. But I didn't think, like, people would just be able to flick on the TV and, like, there it would be. And, like, I don't know. I should have definitely thought about this more. And, like, you know, when it comes to, like, actual real events, like the World Championships and the Olympics and... also, like, Europeans later on, I'll at least, you know what I'm getting myself in for. But I definitely went there with feeling quite naive, just being like, oh, it'll be like a nice team trip, like going to Europeans, and then like seeing like the stadium absolutely packed. So it's just like, oh gosh, like, it's actually quite a big thing there.
And can you remember the race itself then? When you started with this atmosphere, how did you focus on what you were doing? Was it quite easy, or did you?
Yeah, I think honestly, I obviously, it wasn't like a joke at all. Like, I did take it very seriously, but I do think people were a little concerned about my attitude before the race, because I did seem very just like, you know, they were I remember the medical team were giving me these ice towels because it was so hot and humid before, and they gave it to me, and I was like, all right, like, yeah. And they were kind of like, also, like, when do you want to warm up? And I was like, yeah, like about 20, 30 minutes or whatever. You know, I was being quite vague, and that isn't really like me. But I was suspiciously relaxed before that race. I don't quite know, like, why. It might have just been that end of season feeling of, like, oh, I'm going to be done after this race. But I just was, I know it sounds cheesy, but I really was just, like, enjoying it. And I do think people were a little concerned about how, I think people thought I wasn't taking it that seriously, but maybe that's just how I came across. Like, quite jokey as well before, you know, like the cool room, people looked terribly nervous. And I, you know, I'm always like having a bit of a joke beforehand or just kind of like smiling. Cause I think you just get that acceptance of like, oh, well, this is going to happen now. And like, it's going to hurt, but like, may as well just like give it all I've got. And there's nothing you can do. I find it quite calming right before a race because it's, there's nothing you can do. You can just go and do your best at that point. Exactly. Like, the training's done. So, like, what's the point in ruining it by having a nervous breakdown beforehand?
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm looking forward to the future. So you're planning on staying out in Flagstaff for the foreseeable future?
Yeah. And with training... And then,
Karen, sorry?
No, I was just going to say, I intend on flying back for major trial races. But I will be doing a lot of racing out here on the road circuit, and then, you know, the longer races on the track as well, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so looking to Rio, what do you think you're going to run there? Are you going to go for the 10,000 as you've had success there, or is there any thoughts of moving it to a different distance?
Well, you know, I'm not going to rule out the 10,000 metres because I'm sure 10,000 meters will probably feel better than running a marathon in those kind of conditions. I think that is something that's kind of swaying me towards the 10,000. But then, you know, I've always seen myself, ever since I was younger, I've always said I want to do the marathon. I don't know whether that was because I was heavily influenced by Paul Radcliffe's like autobiography when I read it when I was like 15. I just decided I wanted to do the marathon. But that's partly the reason why I joined this team, you know. NAZ Elite, we're not just marathon runners, there's definitely track runners in here as well, and they will, you know, Ben will train me to be a great 10,000 meter runner if we choose. But there are some amazing marathon runners on the team. You know, we have Kellen, who has ran 224, and Steph, who's 228, and I think you know, it would almost be foolish not to take advantage of having those great teammates, especially if I have marathon aspirations. And it is something that I would like to start from. You know, maybe it might be controversial for me to do a marathon when I'm 24, 25, but that is something that I would like to start marathon running earlier in my career rather than later.
Yeah, okay. Fantastic. Well, I shouldn't keep you too much longer, but I've got three quick-fire questions.
Oh, yeah.
And they are, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
So I would have to say I do love Lake Bled in Slovenia. We sometimes drive through it on like our family holidays, and I always used to do a run around that lake, and it's just, I mean, it's just magical there. So right. Lake Bled, yeah.
Lovely. And recommend us something. So it could be anything. Book, film, book.
Oh, gosh, that is tricky. But I would have to say, if you just want like a basic chick flick, Legally Blonde is a winner. And then Breaking Bad, if you're looking for a good series to get into, because it's set in Albuquerque, and yeah, it's just such a great, well thought through series. So I definitely recommend that.
Well, my wife boycotted it after series two when some guy's head got shut in a fridge, and she said, "She said I can't be bothered watching this." So I haven't got any fans of series two.
Yeah, if you're looking for a lighter version, Better Call Saul, you know, the lawyer in it, he has there's like a series on him, and it's a bit lighter for those that don't like the gruesome kind of nature of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I've tried that one too. She vetoed that.
Oh, no. Back to the drawing board. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just me. Our final question is, what in your opinion is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh, gosh. You know, since I have such an appreciation for what it takes, you know, to run at a pace for a long time, I have to say Paula Radcliffe's marathon, the 215, it was 215 high, I think it was, right? 215 high, 216?
Yeah.
I mean, that is just unbelievable, because if you literally, that's, I think that's my 10K pace, maybe, and that just seems unfathomable to me, but I mean, incredible. I think I appreciate it so much more now that I'm more into that, you know, endurance training program. So yeah, that one.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Alison, and good luck with the next year. Good luck with Houston. Fingers crossed that goes well, and your training over the winter for the summer championships.
Nice. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you. So nice interview there from Alice, some nice tips, well, some nice insight into her approach to 10,000 meter running. Thanks for that, Alice. We should say reviews. We love reviews. If you like the show, if you like what me and Jermaine are doing, then we need your reviews to boost the profile of the show.
And all we need is one a week. That's more than enough.
That's more than enough. One. All this lovely time we're giving you in your ears. All we need is a little review from you every now and again. And it's always good.
Please. iTunes. Well, when we talk, they need to, take a bit of earwax out.
We're filling your ears up with this muck. The least you can do is send us a review. And if you did post one a while ago, we lost all our reviews at one stage. So if you posted it more than a year ago, give us another one. It's fine. We need another one. So yeah, that'd be great. But we did get one, and it's quite a funny one because it's from, it's a runner that I know. Firstly, he's given us four stars rather than five. So thanks.
So he's touched a sensitive note for you already.
He's disturbing me. I like this guy.
Well, 4-star is good because the way I see it, 2.5 stars average, yeah?
Yeah.
So as long as you're above average, it's good.
That's true. But the worst thing is, does Tom know. Tom, I used to be the Middlesex captain, right? I used to be Middlesex cross-country team captain. Tom was on the team during my years as Middlesex captain. When I go back to England, the chances are I might still be Middlesex captain. If Tom wants to make the intercounties, he better give us 5 stars next time.
Is this for the veterans?
Your ideas up. Yeah, it's for the veterans now. There's no way I'll make that team these days. But yeah, yeah. But anyway, it's from Tom Aldred. The title is Great Interviews. And it's quite nice because it's like, to be honest, he's not said a single thing about you. He says, great work, Sean. Where's the
Jermaine? Like you said, we're going to get him.
We're going to get him. Yeah. He said, I love the interview of John Downs, though I was slightly terrified by his stories of his epic training efforts. 18 times 1 mile is literally insane. Wendy Sly was great too. The next bit is not really for reviews, Tom. You should have sent me a personal email. He says, I've signed up to the Rotterdam Marathon in April. Do you have any recommendations for the race? Where to stay and where to celebrate afterwards? Keep it up, Tom Aldred. So thanks, Tom. We used to have some good ding-dongs down the years in the Met League, so that was nice to get a review from you. I'll have to email you about Rotterdam. I don't know much about... Actually, I do know much about Rotterdam. Me and my wife cycled, right? It's quite a long way to Rotterdam. We cycled all the way to Rotterdam for a bit of a jolly. It was quite nice in the summer. It took a whole day to do it. And when we got there, it was the World Championship rowing was on in Rotterdam, and we'd booked an Airbnb. But the place, the Airbnb guy, he just walked off for the night. So he left. He said, "I've left your key on the top of the roof above the door. Get yourself in and help yourself." But the key had been stolen. So we were literally there, and we kept phoning him, and he just turned his phone off. So me and my wife were stuck there at 1 a.m. We'd taken all day to cycle, and we were like, "Oh God." We phoned up every hotel in Rotterdam and had to go home on the train, which, yeah, a bit embarrassing. But anyway, that's so, Tom, I don't know anywhere about Rotterdam. I hate that city. That city may be mad, but anyway.
It's a write-off.
It's a write-off. Don't bother. I've heard the marathon's fast, so go and check that out. But yeah. But excellent. So we'll leave you to it. I'm off on holiday this weekend.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Ireland via... I've got a 10-mile race on Ireland on Sunday, and then I'm going to Gran Canaria on Monday. First holiday with the baby. Let's see how that goes. I don't know if we're gonna, don't know how we're gonna survive, but we are gonna go on holiday, and I'm gonna do some trail running.
Well, you're gonna be that person on the plane where the baby's crying and everyone's tutting at you.
Yep, That's going to be me, yeah. And I'm going to be that person in Gran Canaria who does loads of selfie photographs. You know, like those Instagram runners that, you know, spend all their days like setting up the camera as they go down a beautiful trail run. That's going to be me. I'm going to do that. No, I can't bother with all that. So, but anyway, it's going to be fun. What about you? You busy with work?
Back to work tomorrow. So, be crazy stuff happening again.
Sure will. Nice one. Well, we'll speak again soon, Jermaine. Nice one.
All right, cool. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.